You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
A study published in the European Journal of Clinical Urology came to my attention over the weekend. Actually, a doctor brought it to my attention via Instagram. And for a second, I thought about opening this week's show with it, because it's got a catchy title. Men who drive sports cars suffer more from erectile dysfunction than the general population. Who does not love a study that tells us something we kind of sort of want to be true? I mean, those old dudes roaring down the street in flashy sports cars or on fucking Harleys, they got to be overcompensating for something, right? Yeah, but nope, this study's bullshit. Now, dudes in sports cars may very well be overcompensating for something, for all sorts of things, and I do have my own untested hypothesis. As the body gets soft and hairy, the temptation to purchase yourself a hard and smooth exoskeleton grows. I mean, they're called muscle cars for a reason, right? But yeah, no to this study. Again, and sadly, the study that was passed around on the internet this weekend is bullshit. And anyone who took a moment to really look at it, as I have learned to do, would have noticed that the authors include a lying ard and B vulvas, and the research was conducted at some obscure university or some obscure university. Get it? Oh, and the European Journal of Clinical Urology doesn't, you know, technically exist. So that study that I was tempted to open the show with, and I guess I just did, didn't happen. But some terrible things almost happened in the last week, and one terrible thing did happen. A bill almost made its way through the legislature in Texas that would have made getting an abortion a capital crime, meaning women in Texas who got abortions could have been put to death had House Bill 896 made it to the desk of Texas's rabidly pro-life governor. The bill was introduced back in January and was making its way through the Texas legislature. It was only after it got some bad press in mid-April that House Bill 896 was terminated in the fourth month. And quickly, because I can't resist, the bill's sponsor is exactly who you would expect him to be. Tony Tinderholt, family values conservative, bears an uncanny resemblance to Uncle Fester from the Addams Family. This crusader for traditional values has been married 5 times, twice to the same woman, has 3 kids by 2 different women, and his first wife got a restraining order against Tinderholt for causing her bodily harm / injury after divorcing him that first time, and then remarried him, and then divorced him again. Tony Tinderholt, family values. Okay, so while we're all glad that didn't happen in Texas, House Bill 896 didn't happen, Tony Tinderholt happened in Texas and is still happening to Texas, here's something that did happen in Ohio. Mike DeWine, Ohio's Republican governor, signed a so-called heartbeat bill into law, which bans abortions after the 6th week of pregnancy. There are no exceptions in the law for rape or incest, but an exception can be granted if a woman's life is in danger. Ireland, until very recently, had a similar law on the books, and women whose lives were endangered by their pregnancies died while waiting for exceptions to be granted. So, yeah, not a formal death penalty in Ohio, but still, some women in Ohio could wind up paying with their lives. There are now 6 states that ban abortion at the 6th week, which it's important to note, is usually before a woman even knows she's pregnant. Here's what Frieda Levinson, legal director of the Ohio ACLU, had to say about Ohio's new abortion law. This legislation is blatantly unconstitutional, and we will fight to the bitter end to ensure that this bill is permanently blocked. Here's the thing. While Ohio's abortion ban may be unconstitutional now, it's probably not going to be unconstitutional for long. Social conservatives in state legislatures, family values creeps like Tony Tinderholt, are teeing up Supreme Court challenges to Roe v. Wade. And with the new conservative majority on the court brought to you by a president elected by a minority of American voters, Ohio's abortion ban could be blatantly constitutional before we head to the polls next year. This is where I typically tell y'all to get in the fight, and you should. But we have to recognize that this fight is going to be a long one. It's going to be a generational project to claw the courts back, courts we liberals and progressives for too long took for granted. And we're going to suffer some hits and losses in the meantime, and we're going to have to come to our senses. And like I said, we're going to have to get in the fight. Pick a candidate you love. Support that candidate, local, state, national, presidential level. And repeat after me, I pledge to support the Democratic nominee for president, whoever she winds up being in the end. Or he, could be a guy, that's happened, could happen again. And maybe while you're at it, throw a few bucks at the ACLU. I realize that intro got a little depressing, so we're going to close with this. A new study says humans with showy beards are more likely to have small testicles. You saw that headline? I just read the study. That's bullshit, too. All right, coming up on the Micro and Magnum editions of this week's Savage Lovecast, author, internet rights activist, and really good sex advisor, Cory Doctorow joins us to talk about his new book and to field some of your questions with me. Again, that's on the Micro, a little bit of Cory, and a lot of Cory on the Magnum on this week's Savage Lovecast. This episode is brought to you by Tushy, the modern bidet attachment that your butt will love and everyone who loves your butt will love too. Visit www.hellotushy.com for 10% off your entire order when you use the promo code SAVAGE. Stop wiping and start washing. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by OpenFit, offering streaming workouts for every goal. Change the way you work out today. Get a special extended 30-day free trial membership when you text my code SAVAGE to 303030. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Blue Apron. Check out this week's menu and get $60 off at blueapron.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. My question is this. At what age do you get the Dan Savage marriage approval stamp? You get a lot of calls that go something like this. I'm a person in my early 20s and my fiance slash husband ... And your response always includes some kind of warning about not getting married in your early 20s. So my partner and I are in our mid-20s, and being from the South, we seem to represent this last bastion of unmarried couples from back home. Everyone else is either single or engaged or married, and that doesn't just go from people. Like, it's not just religious people. It's really bled into the general culture there. Nobody even bats an eye when people get married fresh out of college. So we've been together since we were teenagers, and we've lived together for 3 years with a joint checking account, and we don't have any specific plans to get married at the moment. We'll probably do it at some point when we decide it makes sense. But right now, we're just happy and committed. Mostly, we don't mind fielding all the bewildered questions from relatives about if we're going to seal the deal. But I am curious, if early 20s is too early and late 20s isn't, then what is the age that Dan Savage says you can get married? Or just what boxes does a couple need to check before you will write them that permission slip?
I guess the South, the Bible Belt, where everyone is either single or engaged or married or divorced. The divorce rate is higher in the South. Divorce correlates really strongly with early marriage, and divorce seems to correlate really strongly with getting married for all the wrong reasons, like your friends are all married and they're all under 25, or that's what Jesus wants, and so you're going to get married to be right with God, or you can only have sex after you get married, and so you're going to hustle yourself into a marriage because you gotta fuck, and it's the only way you can fuck. Those are terrible reasons to get married, because other people are doing it because you want to fuck and you need to do this first before you can fuck. But you don't need my stamp of approval to marry. You can marry when you want to marry. And there are trends and there are data points. And it may be that you and your partner ought to get married with or without my stamp of approval. You've been together a long time. My objection, or one of them, to people getting married in their early 20s is they're often marrying someone they haven't known for very long, someone whose farts they haven't smelled. You need to be able to identify your own partner's farts in a crowded amphitheater before you marry, in my opinion, because eventually you're going to be able to do that. And if their farts are a deal breaker, you want to know that before you fart your way down the aisle with them. So my discomfort with people who marry early is really tied to the research that shows that early marriage, people who marry young, are likelier to divorce. Now, there's some, you know, bugs in that research. It may be that more people marry in the South, and therefore more people can get divorced in the South, but, or in the Bible Belt, but the data does point to waiting a bit until marrying, having your 20s to be on your own or having your 20s to be, you know, with somebody but still figuring it out and experimenting and maybe with somebody else, being a serial monogamist before marriage, that lifestyle, those lifestyle choices correlate more strongly with long-term successful marriages than the other way around. So just being a little bit superstitious. And I'm always concerned when I hear from people who are 21 and marrying someone they met a year ago. And I'm a fan. What are the options that you cite? Single, engaged, married. I would add divorced to that list. But one of the options you cite was engaged. And I love engagements. And I love early engagements. The problem is when you treat engagement like it's an assembly line that's hustling you along to marriage in 3 months or 6 months or even a year, you can be engaged for a few years. It's kind of a fancy, no legal documents required, no divorce papers required if you decide to terminate. It's kind of a fancy going steady. It's kind of a supercharged, hey, everybody, we're super serious about this, and this is the direction in which we are headed, going steady. So if you two want to like call yourself engaged, that definitely gets my stamp of approval. And you should enjoy a nice long engagement. And if you do enjoy a nice long engagement and you get married later in your 20s or even in your early 30s, your marriage is likelier to survive for the long term.
Hi, Dan. I am a 23-year-old bisexual man living in the Midwest, and I've had an open relationship with a semi-straight woman for about 6 months now. She has a lot of sexual experiences. I have a lot of sexual experiences, and we love sharing and discovering things with each other. An issue I've been having is, as a bi man, I've never made the leap to have anal sex with another man, despite the fact that I want to. This is more of an issue of my past. I was molested when I was a child. I had a homosexual relationship with a good friend when I was in high school that turned abusive. And as a result, I've never been able to take that leap. My girlfriend has offered many, many times to facilitate something like that because for her, she loves watching two men fuck each other. It gets her off in a huge way. So she was ecstatic when I brought up, you know, this idea to her. The issue being something about having my first gay sexual experience being fetishized is a huge block for me. And we've had talks about it, and I've said I'm a little uncomfortable that this is more about getting off than it more is about supporting me. And she always says, well, why can't it be both? Why can't I be there for you and also get off myself? At this point, it would cause a rift if I went off and fucked another man and she wasn't a part of it. Despite the fact that we have an open relationship, I've trusted her with this task of helping me through gay sex, and I feel like it's too late now to take that back.
You say you're in an open relationship. Does that mean, you know, every open relationship is different? People have their own rules. Does that mean you guys have three ways sometimes with other women together? Does that mean that she sometimes fucks people without you and you sometimes fuck people without her, just not any gay sex?
Yeah. I fuck people without her. She fucks people without me. We've tried the group sex thing before. It's more of her thing than it is mine.
Okay, so that's all I needed. Like, she has had sex with men without you present.
Yes.
But she does not want you to have sex with a man about her present.
That's not exactly what she's expressed. It's more just that at this point, it's been built up so much that this would be a great first time for me with her present.
But it wouldn't be. You don't want to have to perform gay sex the first time you have it. And there's your history of sexual abuse to factor in, too. And it sounds like you don't want to have to be juggling a lot of other people's needs at that moment. You need to be focused on your own needs and comfort at that moment and not having to worry about your girlfriend's need or comfort at that moment where you're having sex with another man for the first time or being anally penetrated by another man for the first time. And that sounds perfectly reasonable. Why can't she hear that?
Well, it's a little more complicated. For me, the reason why I wanted her involved in the first place is because the biggest roadblock for me is being alone with another man.
Ah, okay.
Up until this point, all my experiences with men have been just making out in gay bars, the occasional bathroom blowjob, but never anything one-on-one where I might be caught in a compromising position. So to have someone who I trust like that is something that I do desire. It's something that I want. It's just the part that makes it uncomfortable is that it makes me feel weird that it's fetishized. And I know that's selfish to say that I want her to be there and not come.
Okay, so I'm having a hard time following this. You do want her to be there to sort of act as hall monitor, but you don't want her to be masturbating. You don't want her to be aroused or get off or enjoy it. You just want her there as your spotter.
Well, the way you put it, it sounds very selfish, but yes.
I don't think that's selfish. I mean, I don't think that's necessarily selfish. And she wants it to be both, like for you and for her, for both of you to get off. And my take on that, my instant take on that, the note I made as I was listening to your call is, it can be both, perhaps, eventually. Does it have to be both right out of the gate?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think you're right about that.
Okay, so if you said that to her, like just this first time, because I've never been alone with a man in this way, because making myself vulnerable in this way is kind of like sandpapering my nerves and bringing up some past issue of trauma for me, this first time, maybe the first couple of times, I just need you to be there for me as my support system and keep your pants on. And, you know, as I get more comfortable with this, then we can incorporate it in the way that you want to, too. We can move in that direction if I'm comfortable with it. I'm not comfortable with it. If, like, the first time we try this, I'm uncomfortable and it's an unpleasant experience, we're never going to do it again and never be able to move in that direction. We won't be able to incorporate this into our sex life in the way that you might like to if I don't feel emotionally safe. And what you're asking for is to be your emotional safety in that moment, to be there for you emotionally, to provide her moral support, so you're not alone with this dude, but for it not to be about her getting off this time. And she can't give you that gift? That seems not only kind of small of her, but self-defeating if you view your sex life not as one discrete event, but as, you know, an open-ended series of potentially awesome events.
Yeah, I should express it to her like that. You have better words than me.
Well, you can just have her listen to the show, or you can give me her phone number and I'll give her a buzz if you like.
She does listen to this show. I think we'll be able to figure it out from here.
Okay, well, good luck to you. You know, sometimes you need your partner to be there for you. And sometimes, you know, it's okay in a context of relationship to make a selfish request. You know, I do think that when it comes to, you know, a pair bonded, even couple in an open relationship, that it's legitimate for one person to say to the other, okay, what's in this for me? Like when you have these adventures, it's better if there's something in it for me too, so we both feel like these are adventures we're having together, and this is about our shared sex life, even if sometimes you're off on your own or I'm off on my own. So I think that maybe her impulse is legitimate, but I think she's being a little blinkered or short-sighted about the, you know, the potential long-run benefits of being the girlfriend you need at that moment, at that one time. And there are potential long-run benefits, open-ended benefits, if she can be that person at that time for you that you're asking her to be. That's not all you're asking her to be ever in that kind of scenario. But at least that first time, first couple of times, this is what you need from her. This is what you need from your partner. And she should be willing to do that for you, to give that to you.
I think she'll be able to do that.
Good luck. And, you know, if the last thing I wanted to say to you is, you know, if you're having, you know, if you have unresolved trauma about these past sexual experiences with men, in addition to talking to your friendly neighborhood sex advice podcaster and your girlfriend, you might want to unpack that with a therapist, too.
Oh, I've been doing that.
Okay,
thank
great.
You.
Good luck.
Thank you so much.
Bye. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Tushy. Tushy is the modern bidet attachment that hooks up to any standard toilet in under 10 minutes and gives your butt the thorough clean it deserves. Your ass and everyone who loves your ass and gets near your ass deserves it. People sometimes call into the show and ask about keeping themselves clean and ready and prepped for butt sex, and this is a big part of how you can accomplish that. You might think that bidets are expensive, but not Tushy. It is only, I hope you're sitting down, $69. That's cheaper than the average vibrator. If you're going to invest in your sexual pleasure, why not invest in your health and cleanliness down there too? Tushy provides a luxurious clean at an affordable price, and I highly recommend it. Go to HelloTushy.com and get 10% off your order with promo code SAVAGE. Stop wiping, start washing with Tushy.
Hey, Dan. I am out in the Midwest and have a question about my 8-year-long boyfriend. He has a great relationship with his mother. They have a wonderful time together, and she's very considerate of myself, always asking how I'm doing. She and I have a great relationship in and of ourselves. Recently, she's done a couple things that have really made me feel unwelcome and unincluded. Now, I don't believe she wakes up every day and asks how she can not include me. She's, like I said, a very considerate woman. However, she went to a wedding and only invited her 2 sons without me. Now, he and I have split twice, but we've now been back together for over 1.5 years. We're both in our 30s, well on our way. So we went to this wedding, she, her sons, 2 sons, including my boyfriend, and it just rubbed me the wrong way. I felt discluded, even when I asked him why I wasn't included. He didn't really have a good answer. He just said she was just so stubborn. Well, then the other night they get these concert tickets to a concert I super like, and I could have very easily been included, and once again I was discluded. Now, I understand maybe she just wants to have some time with her sons. That's totally fine. However, I'm wondering how I proceed. Do I have a conversation first with the boyfriend, who we have a great, open, honest relationship, great communication? Do I have a conversation with him about how I feel now again about being left out, how I had already felt left out for that wedding? Or do I have a conversation straight with her? Obviously not a confrontation, but a conversation about how I'm feeling and about how I would like to be more on her radar. I'd love to get your take on it. I'm feeling pretty left out of the picture, which is not a nice feeling to have.
If it's totally fine that your boyfriend's mother sometimes likes to spend time alone with her sons, why are you calling? I get it. It rubbed you the wrong way. But we're talking about one wedding that she went to with both her sons and one concert that she went to with both her sons. If she'd invited her other son's girlfriend or boyfriend, or NB friend, if she invited her other son's partner to the wedding and to the concert and excluded you, didn't extend that same invitation, that same consideration to you, that same respect for your role in her son's life that she extended to her other son's partner, well, then there would be a problem here. There would be exclusion here. She would be sending you a sign. She would be sending her son a sign, and it wouldn't be a positive one, and it would be something you would want to address. Now, you're having feelings about this, and you have an open and honest relationship with your boyfriend, and so you should address these feelings. You should say, you know, kind of felt bad when you went to that wedding with your mom and your brother without me. I would have liked to have gone, and I especially would have liked to have been included in that concert. You know, a concert isn't like a wedding where you sit at a dinner table and you chit-chat with the people on your left and your right, and you can bond and connect. A concert, you're just listening to music and hanging out and jumping up and down together. So that one really kind of rubbed me the wrong way. Because I can understand your mom wanted to reconnect you at the wedding, but at the concert, like, why couldn't I have come? Also, you could have invited yourself along instead of stewing. I'd like to go to that show. You could have reached right out to mom and said, if it's all right with you, I'm going to grab a ticket too and tag along because I love that band. And then seen how she reacted. But you're going to need to address this. It sounds like an insecurity. And you should own it as an insecurity of yours. And you're not asking her not to spend time alone with your boyfriend. You're just asking her to be considerate, that you have this little insecurity, so that those times when she wants to be with him alone, she wants to have some family time, just her sons, just her kids, that she should frame it that way. So you don't have to wonder if that's what's going on or if she doesn't like you and doesn't want you around. And then all the other times you hang out, boyfriend, girlfriend, you're all together, you need to give those times as much weight and value or more than those handful of times, talking about twice in 1.5 years, that she wanted to be with her sons, which is a perfectly legitimate thing for her to want to be with her sons, want to have some family time, also want to be with you, want to be with her son's partner and her other son's partners, also legitimate. Speak up, but own it. Own it as your insecurity. If you are the cook in your home, it's time to learn some new recipes. And if you don't cook, it's time to learn how to cook at all. And Blue Apron is here to help you just like they helped me. Blue Apron helped me discover my inner chef and now helps me learn new recipes and techniques all the time. And I kind of love cooking now. Blue Apron, they've exposed me to delicious recipes I wouldn't have thought to try. And with Blue Apron, the hard parts are done for me. Cooking really isn't a burden anymore. In fact, it's actually kind of fun to learn new kitchen skills with each meal, skills that you can apply when you're cooking on your own without Blue Apron's assist. Because of my hectic schedule, I felt like I had no other option than to go out to eat more than I should, even when I'm home. But with Blue Apron, I actually have time to cook a delicious, wholesome meal instead of relying on takeout or heading out. Blue Apron's chef-designed recipes include specialty sauces and premium ingredient blends that would otherwise be difficult, expensive, or time-consuming to source and to make. Their test kitchen's whole goal is to make dinner more accessible, exciting, and delicious than ever. So, to start making delicious, brag-worthy meals at home without the hassle, try Blue Apron. Check out this week's menu and get $60 off when you visit blueapron.com/savage. Support the Lovecast, get $60 off, and make yourself something amazing by going to blueapron.com/savage. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
Hi, Dan. This is a 32-year-old bisexual female calling about a friend. A friend of mine recently came out to me as trans and wants to start transitioning. She is really afraid of the whole process, or excited about the whole process. And one of the things she's afraid of is that she will chicken out and not follow through. She's asked me to hold her accountable by making an email list, which if she doesn't make the steps that she wants to make, including support, groups and therapy, and consultations with doctors, and any kind of hormone treatment or surgery that's medically approved and that she decides to go through with, by a certain date, sometime, you know, distant in the future, that'll give her the time to do those things, then she wants me to be holding this email list, like via MailChimp or something like that, that she won't have access to, but will automatically send out a message coming out to her friends and family at that time. I understand why, like, having an accountability would be helpful, and I'm not totally unwilling, but I'm just wondering if there's any ethical or logistical problems that maybe I'm not thinking of.
Your friend's transition is not your responsibility. And it's a little weird that she's trying to, under the guise of asking you to provide her with some accountability or feedback, make it your responsibility for her to come out and for her to take these steps at a certain time or what? Or you're going to set up some sort of automatic email that outs her as trans to her family and friends? The only other scenario under which I've heard that sort of thing described, you have to do X, Y, and Z by this time, or you will be automatically outed to your friends and family. I have their emails, and I set this thing up, and so you're on the hook. The only other sort of relationship I've ever heard that exact scenario described, that kind of accountability described, is in a FinDom relationship. You have to come through with a certain amount of money by a certain amount of time, or these videos that I want to see you in by a certain amount of time, or I'm going to out you as who you are in the FinDom relationship or a DS relationship, is the like pervert little sub you are, or the cash pig you are to all your friends and family and embarrass and humiliate you. And so it's a little weird that your friend who's talking about transitioning is borrowing this quote unquote accountability model, or maybe just came up with it all on her own, where the only parallel that I'm aware of out there in the world with email is in a fetishized, kinky DS relationship. So I think you need to tell your friend that you will love and support her as she transitions. You will listen to her. You will accompany her if she needs a little moral support to appointments when you can. You have your own life you have to run and manage and worry about. But if she needs somebody to go with her every once in a while or meet up with her after a support group to vent or unload, you will be there for her. You are not, however, going to out her if she doesn't hit these milestones, if she doesn't hit these marks by a certain time. That's not support. I'm not sure what exactly that is, but that's not support. And it's not reasonable for your trans friend to ask you for whatever that was. Trans is not a kink, and transitioning takes time, and sometimes it takes more time than a person thought it would. So to set some date arbitrarily now, by which point she must do X, Y, and Z, or you're going to out her as trans, that's just crazy talk. That's not how someone who is beginning their transition in the right frame of mind, a reasonable person, would discuss their transition. Some people begin to transition and it takes them more time than they thought it would. There are even people who've begun to transition and then realize they weren't actually trans. what's supposed to happen then? You're supposed to be the sword of Damocles hanging over her head and fall on her if during her transition she discovers she wants to take more time to socially transition or medically transition than she initially thought she would before she even took one step toward transition? Yeah, this isn't coming from a healthy place, what she's asking you to do. And you do not have to do it. You can tell her no. Sometimes saying no is the supportive thing to do. Here at the Savage Lovecast, we want you to love your body no matter what your ideal body looks like. We want you to feel good in your skin. And working out can be a great way to get stronger and fitter and feel more comfortable and alive in your body. But sometimes you need an extra push to commit to your workout schedule. OpenFit is bringing you something new that makes it easier to never miss a workout session. Lose the commute to the gym and let the workouts come to you. OpenFit takes all the complexity out of losing weight and getting fit, if that's your goal. It's a brand new, super simple streaming service that allows you to work out from the comfort of your living room in as little as 10 minutes a day. Everyone's bodies are different, and OpenFit gets that. That is why it is personalized to your needs with custom-tailored original content. OpenFit classes are led by some of the most effective and engaging trainers in the world that know how to get you results. Working out doesn't have to be stressful or add complexity to your life. Just press play and work out on your own schedule. View on your computer, web-enabled TV, tablet, smartphone, and Roku. You can lose weight if that's what you want, flatten your abs if that's what you want, shape your body and look and feel great, or just get up and get moving if that's what you want. I personally love working out, made it a regular part of my life that I genuinely look forward to. And with OpenFit, you can get working out or change the way you work out. And when you text my code SAVAGE to 303030, you can embark on a fitness journey personalized just for you. Again, text my code SAVAGE to 303030 and start using OpenFit for your path to a healthier life. Right now, during the OpenFit 30-day challenge, my listeners get a special extended 30-day free trial membership to OpenFit when you text SAVAGE, S-A-V-A-G-E, to 303030. You'll get full access to OpenFit, all the workouts, and all the nutritional information totally free. Again, just text SAVAGE to 303030.
Hi, Dan. I am a 40s straight single woman in San Francisco, and I am dating. I have a master's degree, and I had trouble finding work in my field. So I started driving in the gig economy. And I find a lot of times that when I go on dates and I tell guys what I do for a living, they don't know what to do with that information. It throws them and it seems a little awkward. So I'm wondering if you have any advice for me on rolling this out. Is there a good way to do that? Or is the negative reaction an indication that maybe they're not somebody I want to date? For what it's worth, most of the guys that I date are sort of credentialed and established in their careers. Again, I'm dating guys who are mostly in their 40s as well. Is there a technique to rolling this out, or is it a sign?
Joining us in the studio to help tackle this question, Cory Doctorow, writer, actor, journalist. His new book, Radicalized, which is amazing. I've already read a big chunk of it. It is stunning, is out now. Works with the Electronic Frontier Foundation, co-owner and editor of Boing Boing, and a man who only touches women with his penis. Or woman, singular.
You know, I think that didn't come out the way you wanted it to sound.
But that is why you're here, because every once in a while we let, you know, straight male voices.
Oh, I see what you
voices.
Mean. You mean that the only people I touch with my penis are women, not that the only way I touch women is with my penis.
Yeah, oh, no, I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I don't know why you went there, but that's not where I was going.
That's a lot. And I should mention activist, not actor.
Oh, did I say actor? I meant activist.
Okay.
Pardon me.
You know, as a card-carrying member of the Democratic Socialists of America, I would say that the way that you roll this out is with a litmus test. You have to start with something a little, you know, less controversial, like class war, right? And if you start with, like, you know, how do you feel about our widening inequality and the increased precarity?
Oh, you're already giving advice to this person?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay, I wasn't ready to give advice to this person yet. I still wanted to justify your presence.
Sure, let's do that.
Because the issue with a lot of call-in advice shows is women are a lot likelier to call with their
sure.
problems, want to talk about their problems. These kinds of shows are hosted most often by women, by other women, sometimes by homos like me. And so straight male voices are underrepresented in this.
Will no one
on this platform
finally listen to a middle-aged white straight dude
Exactly. So I'm trying to I'm offering you my platform as a straight white male dude, because straight white male voices are underrepresented in the advice racket.
Sure.
And so that's why you're here.
Right.
Not because of Boing Boing, not because of Electronic Freedom Foundation, which are, you know, really impressive.
Right.
But
right.
It's your experience as a cis man who touches women with his penis, not only with his penis and only one woman,
and
your
and
wife.
Yes. And also I only touch women consensually and mostly not with my
penis.
Well,
that's – of course. Of course. I wasn't suggesting you were like running down the street throwing your penis at women randomly.
Also, I can't throw my penis.
Some lesbians I know can't. All right. Now All let's right. tackle this question
sure.
now that you're here.
So again, as a card-carrying member of the DSA, I have had many fruitful discussions about inequality, class war, the widening gap between the rich and the poor, increased precarity – and I'm only semi-joking when I say that you can start with that, because I actually think that's a conversation we're all ready to have. I'm also a former Silicon Valley techie person. I moved to California in the mid-90s to work for a startup I co-founded during the first dot-com bubble. And my experience is that the good techies that you want to talk to are the ones who will at least have that conversation with you seriously. And when you start there – then this business about, you know, working in a precarious occupation becomes a lot less
working in the gig economy.
Yeah.
And I mean, if she's dating high echelon guys, she's probably dating people who constructed the gig economy.
Or you know, who are friends with people in it or who are involved in it in some way. And, you know, on the one hand, like, obviously I live in Los Angeles, so and we're a one car family. So I take a lot of gig economy cars. And those people are actually a lot less kind of chary about what they do for a living, because it's like, well, you know, I had one guy drove me to the airport who was like, well, I've directed 11 low budget horror movies in the last 2 years, and this is how I come up with the capital for it. It's you know, like when you're in the entertainment industry, it's mm-hmm. just one of those regular gigs. And you know, obviously people who do that job, they have a lot of great stories to tell, and terrible stories to tell, but interesting stories to tell. They come into contact with lots of different kinds of people. They cross a lot of class boundaries and a lot of cultural boundaries.
People who drive.
People who drive, yeah. And so they have much more interesting lives than your average tech bro.
And I would file this under, you know, it's a very crowded, very fully packed file here in my filing cabinet. This file's under, you're telling someone one thing about you, their reaction tells you everything about them.
I think that's true, yeah.
You wouldn't want to date somebody that you had to hide the fact that you hadn't found a position yet in your field and that you were doing what you needed to do to feed yourself. And someone who looked down on you for that, fuck that person.
Yeah,
don't fuck that person.
Yeah, well, exactly. I'm with you. I mean, I think that, you know, there are so many people who are in that circumstance. And if you meet someone who reacts really violently to it, you're learning one of two things about them. One is either that they're a snob, or the other one is that they're monumentally insecure and they're thinking there, but for the grace of God, go I. And I think that actually the latter is redeemable, which is why I think if you open with the conversation about class struggle and precarity and late stage capitalism, that you might find yourself in a, you know, priming your partner.
Do a lot of people get laid opening with a conversation about class struggle?
I was raised by Marxists, so my parents certainly did. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I'll have to take your word for that. You are the product of a conversation about class struggle that resulted in
Absolutely.
Sexual activity.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of red diaper babies. I'm reasonably certain that, you know, those millennial DSA rallies are massive hormone festivals.
There are some full diaper babies at those millennial DSA rallies, I gotta say.
Yeah, yeah, fair enough.
But there are some full diaper babies everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. Apropos of nothing, Boing Boing was once censored by a company who provide censorware, and they started blocking us to their corporate clients for quote unquote nudity because of stuff like we'd had a picture of Michelangelo's David. And the guy who ran it had a whole giant Usenet posting history about his diaper fetish. And it was one of those deals where, you know, do as I say, not as I do. When I do it, it's just the normal glory of human sexual expression. When you do it, you know, it's my job to make sure that people in corporate America and airports
can't
see it.
So many people externalize their internal struggles.
Yeah.
So many people externalize and weaponize their own shame around sexuality, around sexual expression.
Yeah.
Almost as penance. Like, I know what I'm doing is kind of squeaky and I feel bad about it, so I'm going to shut down what other people are doing that they ought to feel bad about, so there's less bad stuff of like this in the world. And the you know, as it averages out, I made sure that there's less of it in the world, even if I still want my little piece of it.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And you know, I've heard you say that many times. And I think when you talk about people who are freaked out by the possibility that they're that they're hanging out with someone who's economically precarious, that that's a lot of what they manifest, right? Is that fear that, first of all, they may be complicit in the precarity, and second of all, they might be next.
Well, we all are on the edge of being next. That's what this economy is about. No one's position is secure. We're all made insecure by our economic system, because then we can be controlled.
Yeah. And also, you know, it's a bit of game theory that once the kind of people at the top realize it's all a grift, they recognize that either you get in the grift boat or you're floating around at sea, and they know where they want to be.
So don't fuck those guys. Can we talk about your book real quick?
Yeah, let's talk about my book.
I don't read fiction, and I actually have sort of an aversion to dystopian fiction and science fiction, because I want to write or direct the dystopian film about a future dystopia where there's a lot of dystopian films that are made intentionally to distract people from our dystopian present. Like, we are living in a dystopia.
Sure.
So going to like escape this dystopian nightmare that we live in by looking at some future dystopia, I don't find that comforting. I find that just increases my anxiety. I want to watch films about dead queens. I want to watch films about Mary Queen of Scots, Queen Elizabeth. I want to watch films. I want to make films about them. And so I approached your book with some trepidation, because you write science fiction. And I read the cover, the title story. It's a collection of short stories, not short stories,
four novellas. Yeah.
And Radicalized is the title. And it's one of the stories. And I couldn't put it down. And I'm not like shining you. If I didn't feel this way, I would just have not discussed your book. I would just would have like talked about you touching women with your penis and stuck with that. It is amazing and riveting. And I don't want to give it away. I don't want to spoil it for people who are going to approach it cold like I did. But it's terrifyingly plausible to such an extent that I worry that could it get you in trouble if somebody took Radicalized, the title story for this collection that everybody out there should get and read, as a blueprint? Does that worry you? I worry sometimes people are going to do what I tell them to do.
I think that the course of action in the book is somewhat obvious, right? So, rather than be totally coy, I'll just say very briefly that the premise of the story is that entitled middle-class white dudes take a break from murdering women who snub them and brown people going to mosques, and instead start murdering healthcare executives who deny the people they love most care and send them to a slow, painful death, which I think, as you say, when that scenarios presented, you immediately start to ask yourself, how is it that that's not here already?
So how did that not already happen?
I don't think I'm the first person to have thought of it. And by digging into the ambiguity and the difficulty of that situation, I hope that I'm actually, you know, moving the discussion into a place it hasn't been. I mean, one of the reasons it's called Radicalized is because our discussion of radicalization it's this really weird, you know, kind of floating in the middle of the universe with no causes attached to it, you know, thing where you have these people who are, quote, radicals, and they're like patient zero. And then people who are otherwise completely great come into contact with the radicals, and they catch radicalization, and then they go and do something awful. And I don't think that's actually what happens. You know, I think that what happens instead is you have people who are traumatized who come into contact with people who give them easy explanations for their trauma,
Or an action plan.
And then an action plan to do something about it. Yeah. And I think that our response to radicalization, it's like that really shitty apology that goes, I'm sorry you're so angry at me.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I'm sorry that this trauma in our world traumatized you so much. We're not going to do anything about the trauma in the world, but have you tried being less traumatized by it, right?
You also put out there this thing that's dangerous to put out there, that people really have a negative reaction to. Violence never solved anything is, you know, an argument that people make with a straight face, even though there's all these examples from the history of humankind that there are things that violence fucked up, and there are also some things that violence solved. And you posit, you frame in this story violence as a solution, or the route that gets us to a solution.
Not by way of advocacy, but, you know, in the same way that, like, if you read Piketty's Capital in the 21st Century, which everyone should read, even though it's 700 pages long, it's a great book.
So I don't need to refill my Ambien prescription.
Yeah, exactly. No, he's a very sprightly writer for a French economist. But he keeps returning to, as he talks about wealth inequality and stability and instability, he keeps returning to the level of inequality in 1789. And his message is to people who in France would immediately get it, because 1789 is the French Revolution. His message to everyone is, you have two choices, right? Either you address the underlying trauma or things break down, Right. And I think that if that story has a lesson, it's that we have these foundational inequities in our society. Some of them are related to what you call amosexuals. I've started calling them musket fuckers. and you know, as a Canadian who then lived in the UK for 13 years, I am mystified by Americans' relationship to guns, but also healthcare.
As an American who's lived in America most of his life, me too.
Yeah. And then healthcare, right? And, you know, everyone who comes to a country that they're not from sees the blind spots that the people who are there don't necessarily see.
You know what the solution to our healthcare crisis is beyond the one that you posit?
Yeah.
Or tell a story about. You're not advocating for it. Every American should be forced to go to Europe or Canada and while there have their leg broken. My mother got very, very ill in Munich when we were traveling together. And she saw socialized medicine from the inside and then was not afraid of it anymore.
Yeah, sure.
And Americans don't know. Like, it's the devil you know, which is the system we have now, which is terrible and ruinous, even for people with health insurance. 3/4 of all health coverage related or health expense related bankruptcy are people with health insurance.
Sure, sure.
And we're just ruined by it. And it's almost like we're going to have all our wealth stripped from us on the way out because we're all going to get sick and die.
Yeah.
And that's the system we've set up, and people are content with it because they fear, oh my God, my mother. When we went to the hospital in Munich, it looked like a 100-year-old building and it was, because it didn't look like a terrarium or a zoo,
right,
like a modern American hospital.
Sure.
Because they were spending money on the 4 doctors who took care of her,
right,
and not on the facility, not on the building, although it was perfectly clean and perfectly fine,
yep,
and perfectly safe. It was an old building and showed. Sorry, we're on a long tangent here, but oh my God.
I mean, my father, I had the inverse experience. My father came to visit last summer. My parents did. And my dad got a kidney stone that went septic, and he went into septic shock and nearly died and spent 6 days in our ICU. Thankfully, he was fully insured. He's a high school teacher. His teachers union has a $1 a month pension plan insurance program that paid the $176,000 bill for his care that we found out about because while he was in a coma and my mom was standing at his side, someone from the billing department of the hospital came up to discuss his insurance, right? And this is not a thing that we would have ever had to deal with in Canada, you know? And so that he got excellent care, and I will never.
It's going to radicalize me.
Yeah, but you know, that was not. Nobody involved in a caring profession thinks that that is the right way to have managed it.
Corey and I kept talking. Corey Doctorow, and he stuck around and took more questions with me on the Magnum.
Hi, Dan. A straight male in my 20s, happily married. We have recently begun experimenting with other singles and couples in the bedroom. And it's been a lot of fun, but I have a bit of an etiquette question. There's this one couple that we've hooked up with a couple of times, and it's been really fun, a really great experience, except that the other girl in the other relationship, her blowjobs are just a little bit too rough for me. And I guess by a little, I mean a lot. They're just not really enjoyable to me. I am uncircumcised. And so my dick is a little bit more sensitive than the average, I believe. And the stuff she's doing, like really focusing on the head, going really hard, playing with my balls really roughly, just does not do it for me at all. I know this is what her boyfriend, the other guy we're hooking up with, really likes. He really likes this stuff. He seems to be very into it. It just doesn't do it for me, though. So I am struggling with how to tell her this. It seems a little awkward to bring it up in front of the group. I don't want to make her feel called out or embarrassed. But I also don't really hang out with her one-on-one that often. And if we were just hooking up one-on-one, I wouldn't hesitate to give a few pointers. But in this situation, it's just a little difficult because the pointers basically boil down to everything you're doing is not really what I'm into. So yeah, I don't know how to bring this up smoothly without hurting any feelings.
You're, of course, in this predicament because men are socialized to defer to women and never say no to women. Holy shit! We never get these calls from men. I want to listen to your call 3 or 4 times or play it 3 or 4 times. Yeah, speak the fuck up. This isn't about telling her she's lousy at giving head. The head that she gives, her style, influenced, inflected by the kind of head her boyfriend prefers, this perfectly great head for her boyfriend is not good head for you. She's trying to suck your dick to turn you on. She's trying to suck your dick to make you feel good. And all you got to say is, whoa, with my dick, we need to be a little gentler. You know, that's too intense for me because I'm uncircumcised. All the reasons you give, even if you weren't uncircumcised, some people just don't like to have their knob gobbled so hard. Some people don't like to have the head worked. Some people prefer the shaft or a lighter touch. You're one of those people. Say so. Use your words. And those are words you should be able to say in front of anybody. If you're at an orgy, if you're having a four-way or a three-way, and one of the people is one of those crazy motherfuckers who likes to bite people hard during sex, you're allowed to say, don't bite me. I don't like that. That doesn't feel good. Just toss it out there. You're not saying you're a terrible person because you like to bite. Some people like to get bit. I'm not one of those people. If they react badly to you putting that out there, to you giving them a little bit of input about what feels good for you, well, then they're a terrible, selfish person who only cares about pleasuring themselves, even when they've got your genitals in their mouth. And they can't be trusted with your genitals. They don't deserve to have your genitals in their mouth. You're having sex with a grown-up. A grown-up can hear a little feedback, even in the moment, even in front of other grown-ups, so long as it's not shaming. And you're not shaming. You're not saying you're lousy at head. Again, you're saying, here's how I like to have my dick sucked. It's a little different than how your partner likes to have his dick sucked. Here is my girlfriend. She'll show you. Use your words. Speak the fuck up. All right, before we get to your feedback, your tweets. Louis Marzella tweets, a moment of appreciation for the soulful and sensual theme music of the What You Got segment on Fake Dan Savage's hashtag Savage Lovecast. Thank you. We love the What You Got theme music, too. It was created for us by The Wet Spots. That's Canadian singer-songwriter comedy duo Cass King and John Woods. Thanks again, Cass and John, for that bed. Mags Dilla, too early, tweets, pissed off at the guy who called Fake Dan Savage's Lovecast, telling girls that if they don't want to be hit on, to just be rude. Dude, if we are rude, we run the risk of getting harassed, assaulted by an angry man. Women have to assess risk in ways that men don't. Hashtag duh. Completely agree. It's a point I make constantly on the Lovecast to men. Thank you, Mags Dilla, too early, for reemphasizing that point. And finally, Leal Like Neil tweets, God, this seems so elementary. I can't believe I have to say it, but please spread the message far and wide. Do not put your mouth on the genitals of anyone who won't put their mouth on yours. Hashtag Savage Lovecast. I agree. To a point, there are people out there into no recip oral, and it's a turn on for them to provide that service without any reciprocation. Fine in that context. If you ask me, not fine in most other contexts. If you want me to read your tweet on the Lovecast, be sure to use the hashtag SavageLovecast. And now your feedback calls.
This is a comment about the woman whose Connecticut friend couldn't stand her telling a story about experiencing racism in her home state and complaining to the group chat about it. Dan, I think you were right to say that this woman should consider cutting this woman out of her life. But I really want to know what happened in the group chat when her friend started complaining about those comments. Someone else in the group chat should have reached out to the caller to say, like, hey, that was fucked up. And if they did, maybe now's the time to ask that person to step up as an ally and stick up for you to your friend who's clearly being toxic. And if no one reached out to you to say that that was fucked up, then definitely ditch all those people.
Hi, Dan. This is a response to last week's caller who was talking about their shitty, crappy friend and said that she had a, quote, victim mentality. I'm a victim advocate by trade, and none of the people that I work with are ever whiny or pathetic or terrible, which are all words that come to mind when people say the words victim mentality. They're actually some of the strongest people I know. So I just wanted to throw out into the ether that maybe we should erase victim mentality from our vernaculars.
This is for the caller on episode 650, whose boyfriend was pushing her head down for sex. My husband likes to do this in a joking way periodically, and what I started doing is putting my hands on top of his head at the exact same time, kind of like a battle of who will concede first, but all in good fun. Next time your boyfriend tries to put his hands on your head and shove you down, why not put your hands on his head and do the exact same thing and see how he likes it? Could be an easy start to say, you don't like it? Well, neither do I, so please stop. Hope that helps.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you want to record a question or a comment for a future show and we'll have your comments, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. Savage Love Live is zipping around the country. We are on tour this year. Upcoming shows in Seattle, Denver, San Francisco, Chicago, Madison, Minneapolis, Toronto, and Somerville, Massachusetts. Go to SavageLovecast.com and click on events for more details. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Follow Cory Doctorow on Twitter at Doctorow, D-O-C-T-O-R-O-W. And pick up his new book, Radicalized. It is an amazing, heart-stopping read. Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. We'll be back at you next week with another installment of Savage Lovecast. Thanks for downloading.